Sports Radio Network. Sports Update.
The update comes from One Bills Drive, where the Buffalo Bills are practicing as we speak inside the AdPro Sports Training Center. Bills getting set to play the Lions on Sunday. LeSean McCoy, who did not practice yesterday with that hamstring strain, looks like he's practicing on a limited basis as practice began about an hour ago. We'll get the complete and official practice report coming up at the end of today's workout. Also, not practicing yesterday, Stephen Hauschka, but he is there on the sidelines at practice today. Lions have their own injury issues. Running back Kerryon Johnson, who's missed a couple of weeks, did not practice yesterday with his knee. His status for Sunday still uncertain. Bills Lions, 1 o'clock Sunday. You can catch the game right here on our flagship radio station in Buffalo, WGR Sports Radio 550. Tonight, Thursday Night Football, and some top offensive players will be missing. Others might not play at all when two of the NFL's high-scoring teams play. The Chiefs and the Chargers meet at Arrowhead Stadium. The Chiefs will be without wide receiver Sammy Watkins with a foot. Starting running back Spencer Ware with a shoulder, and left guard Cam Irvin also might not play. The Chargers, 10-3, fifth in scoring in the league at 28 points per game, will be without second-leading rusher Austin Eckler. Leading rusher Melvin Gordon is listed as questionable to play. The game kicks off 8:20 tonight at Arrowhead. The Chargers and the Chiefs in a big AFC West Division battle. Odell Beckham Jr. not practicing today, getting further evaluation on his quad injury at a local hospital outside New York. He missed practice earlier in the week, listed as a limited participant yesterday. Eagles are concerned about quarterback Carson Wentz and his back. He has a small fracture in his back that may limit him. The Eagles trying to decide whether he can play the rest of the season or not. It is believed to be non-surgical. Las Vegas will host the 2020 NFL Draft. Commissioner Roger Goodell and Raiders owner Mark Davis made that announcement. It'll also be the Raiders' first season in their new stadium there. And Sabres tonight wrapping up their homestand. They're at KeyBank Center against the Arizona Coyotes. That's a 7 o'clock faceoff for the Buffalo Sabres. Jack Eichel red hot, 5 goals in his last 3 games as they go up to against Arizona today. And that's the update from One Bills Drive. John Murphy, Steve Tasker. You don't think you're going to hockey tonight, Mr. Season Ticket Holder, huh?
I might be. I don't know if it's actually been decided.
And who would have the decision to make here?
Well, I'm at the mercy of my offspring.
Okay, I'm familiar with that.
So you know,
they will decide whether you go.
That is correct.
Understand.
That is correct.
Got it. Bills, Lions, and we're going to talk about the Detroit Lions. They're one win better than the Buffalo Bills as we stand right now. Coming to Buffalo for a rare visit to play the Buffalo Bills in the regular season. Joining us on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline, the man who covers the Lions for The Athletic. .com in Detroit, NFL draft analyst, spent 6 years as an NFL writer for Sports Illustrated. Very happy to have Chris Burke on the line. Chris, John Murphy, Steve Tasker here in Buffalo. Thank you for joining us today. We appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I think you should go to the Sabres game, man. They're pretty fun this year, aren't
Steve?
They?
Yeah, they are fun. They are a lot of fun. That doesn't mean that it could go to the top of my priority list without somebody else's permission, you know? So
fair enough.
All right.
Hey, Chris, on the nature of this this series between the Bills and the Lions, I was stunned to learn early this week, I think it was Monday, that the Bills and the Lions have only played 10 times in the regular season. They are regular, almost to the point of nauseam, combatants in preseason, and yet they've only played 10 times. And the Lions, they've only won once here in Orchard Park, one tie at War Memorial Stadium, one win in Orchard Park. That's weird when you consider the preseason history between these two.
Yeah, I don't think anyone minded skipping that preseason matchup this year.
I agree.
Like you said, I think it's gotten a little tiresome. But, yeah, it is a little unusual, especially just given how close they are and everything. I think it sounds like there's going to be a decent number of Lions fans making the trip just because it is one of those. So if we don't go now, when are we going to get to the stadium? You know, it could be another 4, 6, 7 years. So, yeah, it should be fun just to get – anytime you get a kind of unique matchup, it's a little bit of fun.
I got one more off the wall question, I guess, for you. I will confess to having an affection for the Detroit Lions organization, mostly because of the way they welcomed in the Bills about 3 years ago when the snowstorm hit here and in November and the Bills couldn't play at home, and the Lions, their staff was so welcoming and great to the Bills. But I thought back then, and I think now, I don't really get Lions fans. I know they're loyal. I know, you know, it's obviously an original NFL kind of flagship franchise, but how would you characterize the average standard Detroit Lions fan and what they think of their team right now?
I think they've reached the point of the season that they reach a lot of years, which is where they say, oh, that's it. I can't do this anymore. They're bad again. They're going to miss the playoffs. I'm not coming back next year. And then, you know, Sunday will roll around, and like I said, a bunch of them are making that trip to Buffalo. The people will be watching, so they're They're extremely loyal. That's sort of been their reputation forever, you know, to the point where I think they get frustrated at every little thing that goes wrong just because so many things tend to go wrong. But, yeah, I mean, it's an extremely loyal fan base, and it would have to be for them to keep coming back many years it's been since the Lions won a division title or won a playoff game.
Yeah,
well, they make it in at this point of the season, and as many teams, and the Buffalo Bills included, the Lions – I've got some key players that popped up on their injury list. They placed Ziggy Ansa on IR with his shoulder. What's the injury list look like for Detroit? How is this going to affect this game against Buffalo?
Yeah, they're pretty banged up. Like you mentioned, Ansa, I think, has probably played his last game in Detroit, and they had to go with him for a chunk of this season already, so they're kind of used to it. They've done a nice job sort of plugging holes up front and certainly getting Damon Harrison in there. At defensive tackle, that just totally changed their entire front. They're much better against the run now, and he's given them some pass rush too, which I think has been a bonus. So we'll see. They weren't counting on Ansa. I think they're hoping Devon Kennard can come back. He didn't play last week either. If they're neither of those guys can go, Deshaun Hand's banged up. So they've got injuries all over, really. You know, Kerryon Johnson, I think, is probably going to be out again this week. He still hasn't practiced since getting hurt 4 weeks ago. Marvin Jones on IR. They're down their starting guard. So, they're really kind of limping to the finish line here. A bunch of names, especially on offense, that people might not be familiar with. And I think that's why they've turned in their fair share of ugly games here the last month.
Well, it has been some ugly games, like all the teams that are kind of in the same boat as the Bills and the Lions. What is the early return on the fans' expectations and outlook and future expectations for Matt Patricia as head coach?
Yeah, I mean, again, to get back to the frustration of it, I think the reason people are frustrated is because kind of twofold. A, you have a quarterback that you're paying, you know, $30 million a year, and a guy that you've built around for 10 seasons now, really. So to think that you'd be regressing at this point offensively, even with the injuries, is frustrating. But B, you know, they had Jim Caldwell in, and two seasons ago went to the playoffs. Last season, 9-7, and loss in week 16 knocked them out. So to go from there to now they're 5-8 and kind of clinging to, you know, long shot playoff life, I think there's just some frustration that they've taken those step backs. But some silver lining, again, since the Damon Harrison trade, I think the defense, you're starting to see some signs of what Matt Patricia wants that defense to be. So I think that's really the silver lining at this point, is if he gets this offseason, picks a couple guys who he thinks fits the system and keeps building there, then the hope is that they're a lot better there and more successful as a result next season.
On the line with Chris Berkey, covers the Detroit Lions for The Athletic in Detroit. Detroit season, Chris, it seems to me, got started off almost in shocking fashion, really, in two of the first three games. The shocking primetime loss to the Jets, a 31-point loss at home to the Jets, and then 2 weeks later they managed to beat New England. What did those two games mean to the rest of the season and to the expectations for the rest of the season?
Yeah, well, that Jets loss was a bad one, and then they turned around and they lost a heartbreaker in San Francisco the next week. And when you're looking at the schedule, it always shaped up to be a pretty tough schedule, especially over the middle portion of it. So you kind of circled that Jets game and that 49ers game as games they had to have.
Yeah.
Lost both of them. So you figured it was going to be an uphill climb from there. I mean, I think the Patriots game, they beat the Packers a couple weeks later, which, you know, now in hindsight doesn't look quite as impressive, but at the time was a big win for them. And, beat Carolina. They hung in there with the Rams and the Bears. So I think, you know, again, you've sort of seen some signs that this team might have more talent or be better than its record showing. But, you're also 14 weeks into the year now and you're three games under 500 and still scuffling every week. So I think it's been kind of that mixed bag. And, again, that's just why it's been hard to get a handle on this team this year, because there have been games like that Patriots game where it looks like they can hang with some of the better teams in the league, but they haven't been able to get over the top nearly enough.
Yeah, you mentioned a little bit about, you know, the team trying to build for 10 years around Matthew Stafford. A lot of teams are looking over there saying, why isn't he better? Why haven't they been better offensively? And here you stand, like you said, deep into this season. He's got four touchdowns in his last six games. What's the next step for this Detroit Lion offense, and what are people waiting to see?
Well, I think the biggest question going into the offseason for them, period, is what's going to happen at offensive coordinator. There's been a lot of heat on Jim Bob Cooter, and I think those stats for Stafford, you know, some of it's been caused by, like I said, Kerryon Johnson's been out, and so the run game's not nearly as dynamic, and, you know, Marvin Jones has been out. They traded Golden Tate, so, you know, you're kind of scraping the bottom of the barrel in terms of talent at the skill positions, but at the same time, the game plan's been extremely, extremely conservative. A lot of, you know, 3 and 4 yard passes, just trying to milk the clock and win the time of possession battle and, you know, keep the defense off the field. And so Stafford's numbers, I think, to some extent have suffered as a result of that. But, yeah, this is a big offseason for that offense. I think they absolutely have to find someone to try to replace Golden Tate, you know, playmaker from the slot. They're going to need a starting guard. They got to get Kerryon Johnson healthy. So, again, the pieces are kind of there. You can kind of see what it's supposed to be like when everything's clicking, but we never really saw it click the way they envisioned it this season. So, you know, you're going to go into next year sort of wondering exactly what they have.
Hey, Chris, both Steve here and myself spent the early part of this week. You know, you look at the Lions and you see some of the issues, but the one thing that stands out to me is just the arm talent that Matthew Stafford has. And say what you want about conservative offense and even lack of playmakers, outside playmakers, you know, in their offense. That guy can throw it. I mean, he's just perfectly accurate, quick release. He's got to be one of the best, most talented arms in the game still, even without a whole lot of production to show for it this year.
Yeah, no question. I think that's why it's been a little confusing to see the game plan, even knowing that they're limited on offense and, you know, knowing that they're trying to keep their defense off the field. I think that's been the most confusing thing because last year he was one of the most effective deep throwers in the NFL. And this year that's really not in their game at all. He might take one or two shots per game right now to Kenny Golladay, but that's about it. They haven't found anyone at tight end to stretch the field. You know, Marvin Jones wasn't having as much success before he got hurt as he did last year. And they just kind of took that out of their game plan for whatever reason. And he's also been really good in his career at, you know, when he sees a blitz coming or when he play breaks down and he's outside the pocket, his initial instinct in the past has been to get the ball deep and just let, you know, Golladay or Marvin Jones or, you know, Calvin Johnson before that go make a play. And now it's sort of to check it down to whoever's closest to him. So there's been really a fundamental change in the approach offensively. And again, I think that's something they've got to figure out this offseason, whether it's a scheme situation or, you know, he just had a bad year mentally or whatever. They've got to get that settled.
Talk a little bit about the playmakers they have on either side of the ball. You mentioned Damon Snacks Harrison. He has made an enormous difference in their run defense. And Darius Slay was the NFC Defensive Player of the Week for having a pick six. And you mentioned Kenny Golladay as well. Has there been anybody around Matthew Stafford or on either side of the ball that have been consistent enough this year or maybe emerged as a guy that the Lions can hang their hat on?
I think defensively they've got a couple of those guys. Quandre Diggs has been really good at safety, and he's a guy that they can use in a bunch of ways. They'll play him in the slot, and they'll bring him down against the run, and he can play that, you know, sort of single high free safety role too. So he's someone they're – I don't know if Glover Quinn's going to be back next year. I don't know if Tavon Wilson's going to be back. So I think he's someone they're really building around at safety. And Tracy Walker played his season high in snaps. He's a rookie safety, played his season high last week. So probably expect to see him again. You know, they've gotten more production, I think, than they expected out of their front, even without Damon Harrison. Guys like Romeo Okwara, who was with the Giants, and Eli Harrell, they got for a conditional seventh-round pick right before the season, have been effective. They've got 10.5 sacks between them. So, you know, they've had some guys that have stepped up and played well, but it's been pretty hit or miss on that side of the ball, too. I think the key for them most weeks is how Jared Davis is going to play at linebacker. He was great in Arizona last week. He has other weeks where he it looks like he's not reading plays well. It gets in the wrong gaps, and a lot of the big runs they've given up have been because, you know, teams have been able to kind of take him out of position. So he's a huge key for them every week.
Hey, Chris, I was happy to see former Syracuse head coach Paul Pasqualoni land on his feet. He's defensive coordinator there in Detroit. Does he have a role to play there, or is it basically Matt Patricia's defense?
He's calling the plays for the most part on Sundays. So he's got a pretty defined role in that defense. I mean, it's obviously Matt Patricia's sort of vision and his scheme, but Pasqualoni has a pretty good amount of control on a week-to-week basis. And I think that they liked what they've seen at least these last few weeks, especially with Harrison in there. So, you know, he was a guy, too, at the start of the year when things were really going poorly for them. He sort of looked at every coach and said, oh, you could probably replace this guy and might replace this guy. And I think he's sort of re-solidified himself on that staff. He and Patricia obviously have a pretty good comfort level. Sure. So, yeah, he's definitely playing a part in what they're doing defensively.
And I have one more question for you about Matt Patricia. We've talked a little bit here about the Matt Patricia-Brian Daboll matchup, Daboll, the Bills' offensive coordinator. I think they worked on the same staff in New England for 7 years. Much being said about that in Detroit, or what do you think? What do you make of that matchup?
Yeah, Matt Patricia talked about it yesterday, you know, said obviously they're close, and he sort of followed Brian into New England, and so they've known each other for a long time. He said they played against each other, I think, in college, too, so it goes back for a while.
Yeah. What would that be, RPI versus John Carroll, I guess, huh?
Must have played. Yeah. So, and he said, you know, there's sort of pros and cons to it. Obviously,
Daboll's Rochester, isn't he? He's University of Rochester. I'm confused.
Is that right? Yeah.
Yeah,
so
sorry about that.
So they go back a ways. Yeah. He's, you know, from what Patricia said, obviously there's, you know the other guy's tendencies, but he also knows your tendencies. So it's a lot of just trying to make those adjustments on the fly, because going in, you have a pretty good feel for at least what the base is going to be on both sides. So I think, yeah, that's certainly a little bit of a subplot going in.
Yeah. Let's hope we get a good game. You coming here for the game, Chris?
Yeah, I am. Looking forward to it.
Great. Well, we'll say hello. Thank you for coming on with us today. We appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks, guys.
Chris Burke covers the Lions for TheAthletic.com in Detroit. NFL draft analyst, spent 6 years as a NFL writer for Sports Illustrated, joining us on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline presented by Subway Restaurants, proud to be locally owned and operated. Yeah, I misspoke there. U of R, right? Daboll and RPI for...
Is Daboll a U of R guy?
I think so.
I think he was John Carroll. I don't know, because I was with you in the...
He's John Carroll?
John Carroll.
He's U of R.
U of R, okay. Yeah. We're being told.
I'm sorry I brought that up, because it looked like a total jerk bringing that up.
No.
There, you know what I mean? And even you get the sense from Chris Burke, who you got to figure is as close to anybody in Detroit to that team, anybody in the media anyway. He, not a real clear picture of where they're at, where they're going. You know, talk about replacing Jim Bob Cooter, the offensive coordinator, with that spectacular name. You'd hate to lose a name like that in the NFL.
Well, yeah.
And even talk about Pasqualoni in his first year, maybe having some doubters early on. I don't know. I don't know where they're at or where they're going. I don't know what to make of this game coming up on Sunday.
Yeah, I'll tell you, I covered the Lions a couple of games with Jim Caldwell when he was a head coach there. Jim Caldwell was a coach on a staff at Northwestern when I was there under Dennis Green. So I go way back with Jim Caldwell being acquainted, and have covered him a couple of different times, a number of times in the pros, both when he was a head coach at the Indianapolis Colts and obviously when he was with Detroit. He had nothing but great things to say about Jim Bob Cooter. He's one of the smartest guys he'd ever been around. He was really taken with his creativity and all that. It's amazing how things have changed in just a couple of years. And I think a lot of what's going on in Detroit is a little bit of what we saw here with Sean McDermott and in years past with new coaching staffs coming in, where the roster isn't exactly where they want it, and there are some guys that fans had grown to like that just don't fit in the new program. And they're making that switch. Then guys get hurt, and they have to pick guys, and they're picking guys who aren't exactly like the guys that they thought they should pick, because of the new vision that the team's going to be under Matt Patricia. I think that there's no doubt that even with the pieces that they have in place with Matt Stafford and now with Harrison, Damon Harrison, and some of the young guys, Darius Slay, there's going to be some turnover in Detroit. And it's going to continue to evolve there. And so it's hard to get a handle on a team like that. That's new head coach, new staff, a mixed staff, both with, you know, Jim Bob Cooter, who is a carryover from Jim Caldwell, and Matt Patricia coming over. You can see why it's a little bit befuddled when you look at them trying to get a handle on who and what they really want to be.
This happens every year. It happens probably too often. For Bills fans and for me, quite frankly, we're at the weird part of the year where teams have, you know, there's a group of what you were looking at the playoff contenders earlier today. So there's a group of what 15 teams maybe in the league that can look at the playoffs and say, hey, we got to win this week's next. And the Bills were there a year ago. How much fun was that? And then there's the rest of the teams, maybe what 10, 12, maybe 15, who kind of have different reasons for playing, right? The Bills are all about playing and getting Josh Allen ready for next year right now, looking at young players. Trying to figure out what the Lions are all about, right? What were the Jets all about last year, waiting to fire their coach when the year was over? I mean, the Dolphins, when the Bills went down there 2 weeks ago, the Dolphins looked like a team with very little playoff chances, and now they're right in the mix. So it's a weird part of the NFL calendar, I think, as we move through these final 3 weeks where everybody you play has got a different sort of agenda. Do you agree with that, Steve?
Absolutely. There's four teams that can clinch a spot this weekend, and the Chiefs are already in. You know, so it's that time of year where you've got all these teams that are on the cusp of getting in, and only if it collapses do they not make it.
Yeah.
And there's a whole bunch of teams that are like, man, if it falls right for us, we are in.
Right.
Where the Bills were last year.
Where the Dolphins are this year.
Exactly. So it's kind of a fun time for all of those teams. And then
what about the rest of us, though?
Then there's the rest of the teams that are looking like, well, okay. And let's face it, the Bills, there are a couple of publications, USA Today, who had the Bills as the absolute worst team in football. And then yesterday I read a thing where they were – on a scale of 1 to 32, they were fifth best in the league at overachieving.
Overachievers,
that's
yeah.
how low the expectations were for the Buffalo Bills around the league. So and they kind of were right where they were expected to be by a lot of people and better than a lot of people expected them to be. And even with all that, they're not in the playoff hunt. I think we talked about it yesterday about what the expectations are for the next three games for the Buffalo Bills, for the Detroit Lions, and teams like that. And it is about who they can depend on for next year. What guys on the team are going to rise up and say, listen, I am not leaving this team. I'm going to be here. You're going to need me next year. They're making that statement. And I'm sure that the Detroit Lions are full of guys like that.
But also the Lions are different because they have an established quality quarterback. You know, they've got a coach 1 year into his tenure as opposed to the Bills with two. The Lions have their own – they have some similarities to the Bills, lack of offensive playmakers. And maybe some veterans on defense who Chris Burke just mentioned might not be around. It's weird to get, you know, and every week will be like this down the stretch, right?
You know what seems to be, you know what strikes me as weird about the Detroit Lions? They got this quarterback, and then they traded his traded the best receiver. They don't get, you know, they didn't draft around. You say you're building around him. You're trading all his guys.
Right.
You know, he's got nobody there. I mean, what are you doing?
I don't know. I don't know what they're doing. That's what I'm trying to say.
It doesn't make sense from this side of the lake.
Right.
You know?
They probably look at us and say similar things, though. What's Buffalo doing?
Right.
We're going to talk a little bit more about what the Bills are doing this week and our Twitter poll question, which I think is interesting. Why is Josh Allen running so much? What do you think? There are some obvious answers and maybe some less than obvious answers. On Twitter, 54% of you say he's running so much, dummies, because his offensive line keeps breaking down. 16% say he's running so much because his receivers are not open. 15% say he runs because he needs to read defenses better, needs to get better at that. 15% he runs because, let's face it, he's the best option they have on offense. What do you think? Phone line's open. We'll take some phone calls. 803-0550, toll free 1-888-550-2550. Or tweet in your response. We may read it on the air, and we'll keep an eye on the responses to the Twitter poll. Deion Lacy, Bills linebacker, who may play a more prominent role this week, standing by to join us once practice ends. We figure that'll be in the next 45 minutes or so. So stick around for that. One Bills Live from One Bills Drive, and this is Buffalo Bills Radio. Welcome back. One Bills Live from One Bills Drive. I'm John Murphy. Steve Tasker making his way to our set. Something just happened. Something just happened involving chocolate or mocha in a coffee, which has delayed Steve's arrival on the set.
Nothing like that.
I just saw a lot of spraying and swearing going on simultaneously.
I got a cramp.
What?
In my hip and a muscle I didn't know I owned.
So it has nothing to do with the coffee?
Does it stink to get old or what? I'm sitting there doing nothing but getting a cup of hot water for some whatever.
You're making a hot chocolate?
Yeah. And
I thought there was a burn involved.
And I got a cramp. Like in the heart of my hip joint. I don't need. Is that possible?
Do you need medical attention?
I almost went down.
There's an ambulance right outside the door.
Man, does it stink to get old? It doesn't stink. Listen, it's worse to get old than to be out of shape. I'm both.
Are you okay?
And I'm going to be all right now. The cramp went away in my Oof. All right. Wow, that was kind of painful, man.
I heard you yelling in the
other room. I feel good now. I feel good. I'm back in.
Josh Allen, why does he run so much? Give us your answer. 803-0550, toll-free 1-888-550-2550.
Is this yet another tweet sheet that I'm holding?
But let's take a call. Stan on Grand Island. Hi, Stan. Welcome to the show.
Thanks, John. Thanks for having me on. Sure. First of all, I'd like to cast an official ballot for the best thing to come out of Kansas since Eisenhower.
I like that. Stan, you're my new favorite.
And there it is. And Stan, you are the 100th voter for Steve in the Hall of Fame. Congratulations, Stan.
You win absolutely nothing, just like I do.
You're at tempo, right? listen, do you think perhaps our guy might have a bit of Tyrod Taylor disease? I'm speaking now of Josh Allen. He knows where the play is going. I think he knows where the offense is supposed to go. But a lot of times I see him reluctant to throw the ball. I think the great ones are aggressive. They're going to get picked off, guys, you know, that are household names. What do you think about that? Do you think maybe he's just afraid to pull the trigger?
I don't, Stan, and I'm interested in what Steve says. I don't see that. I think he is pretty aggressive. I think he just has to see it more often to realize where he wants to go with it. What do you think, Steve?
When you talk about like that and you're saying you see a little Tyrod Taylor in him, I think maybe there is a little too much of that in him because I just don't think – I don't think he sees it. You know, I don't think he sees it. I don't think he has enough time to look for it. I think it's taking him a little time to digest what he sees. I think I've seen him make some throws that that he did see.
So I'm confused. You do think he has Tyrod
Taylor? He's not doing it. I don't think he's doing it enough. I don't think he sees it. So I don't know whether Tyrod didn't see it, didn't want to throw it.
No, Tyrod's issue, I believe, was he didn't want to force it into coverage. He didn't want to take a risk. I don't think that's the case.
I don't think that's the case with Josh
at all.
And I bit a guy's head off last week on a call when he called in and said he thought he was just like Tyrod. I don't think Josh is like Tyrod. I think the stat line says they're a lot similar. A lot of things say they're similar. I think here's the thing. I think Josh is standing on the floor of his career. Tyrod was bumping his head on the ceiling. I think Tyrod was who he was going to be. He was a six-year veteran. He was the same guy. Josh is standing on the floor. I don't think we know who he's going to be yet. We see him run a lot, and this Twitter poll reflects it. I don't know why it is sometimes. Sometimes it's because I think the pocket collapses around him. Sometimes I think it's because he wants to do it, and he sees some space, and he's going to take it. Some other times I think he looks around and sees he wants to throw it to one of his wideouts and there's just not enough there. And he doesn't want to get it picked off. And I think some other times it's a different reason. Maybe he can't see it. Maybe he didn't read the defense well enough. So all of that stuff's on the table with Josh, but I think we have seen week to week. I think this last week we saw a few more throws than we have seen at times, and maybe we're going to see more of that this week. I don't know. And some of it has to do with the fact that they were playing the Jets and the Dolphins, and this week they're going to be playing the Lions. He's going to look different to him. They're going to defend him differently. So all that stuff, I don't know what we got yet with this guy. We got to see him play more and more football.
I don't think we have a guy who's reluctant to force the ball like Tyrod Taylor was.
Yeah, I don't think so either. I think he trusts his arm a little more than Tyrod trusted his. I think he's more willing to throw it out there than Tyrod was, or at least I'm perceiving that. So I think we need to see more of Josh Allen before we can evaluate him in any way, shape, or form. There's similar things to him as there are. I mean, he's as similar to Ben Roethlisberger and Aaron Rodgers as he is to Tyrod Taylor and Mike Vick and goodness gracious, you can go down the list to guys like Ryan Leaf, for crying out loud. I mean,
are you talking about?
Yeah, I'm saying you're getting the whole spectrum with this guy. You know, he's great and he stinks in the same game. So I don't know. Let's see.
I think it's too early. He has neither been great nor has he stunk. Can I say that? I think he's been better than I thought he'd be.
I think he's been great. I don't think I can't take my eyes off the guy when he plays. I think he's awesome. I think he's going to be awesome. I think he's going to be better in 2 weeks than he was 2 weeks ago. I think he was better this last week than he was 2 weeks ago. I think he's going to continue to trend upward. He's on a trajectory that I really like. I think the sky's the limit for him, and he's, like I said, he's standing on the floor of his career, not the ceiling.
Thanks for your call. Let's go to Sean at St. Bonaventure. Sean, are you a student?
Yes, I'm a student. How are you?
Good. Are you a basketball fan down there?
Oh, a big basketball fan. Yeah, we just had UB last weekend.
That's my question. What it's funny. You walked right into this, Sean, and you were going to get your Bills question on the air here. But I was
Sean, brace yourself.
What the heck happened down there with the fans last week against UB? Were they misbehaving?
Well, that's the thing, John. We the student section down here, I mean, it does get wild.
Do they get rude and offensive and foul-mouthed?
That's the thing. I mean, I am an upperclassman. I was not participating in any of that, poor sportsmanship. But, the president did send out an email saying, that behavior will not be tolerated.
Well, if you can keep it PG, what was the behavior? What was it, stuff they were saying or what?
I think UB, sucks. And, I think they were throwing out the F word a lot. It was just, there's kids, there's people there with their families and kids. I mean, it was just kind of, inappropriate, being a Catholic school and whatnot. But
sounds inappropriate. Yeah, I don't get that about that place. Anyway, Sean, you didn't come here to – what are you laughing at? You're getting the brunt of what I gave one of our staffers today, a Bonaventure alumnus, who I asked him the same question. What the heck's the problem down there?
Sean, let me just tell you, I am so glad you called. Murph has been railing against what happened against UB down at St. Bonaventure this last week. And I'm glad – Sean, you're mature enough to have a handle on it. You're an upperclassman. You know that there was some inappropriate behavior down there. I'm glad you owned up to it. And I think it's interesting that you called today with a Bills question and allowed Murph to question you about what happened between UB and Bona last week down there.
Perfectly okay. I'm a big fan of you guys. I watch you guys all the time.
Thanks, Sean. And
can call anytime you want. Yeah. You now are one of our favorites.
So I owe go you ahead now, Sean.
Yeah, call.
Take as much time as you need. I'm going to
go ahead now. What's your question about the Buffalo Bills?
No, I appreciate it. Like I said, me and my friends are we're big fans of the Bills and whatnot. The poll pretty much asked the question. Is it Allen's inability to read the defense, or is he our only threat, or lack of threats, or the offensive line? My question that I asked earlier was kind of just like, moving forward, we have so many first-year and second-year players, like Zay Jones, Wyatt Teller, on the offensive side. And I think McDermott and Bean have done a great job, trying to rebuild this team. We are in a rebuild year. My question is, if you guys can just elaborate more, what's our strategy moving forward with these young talent? Because I think Bean and McDermott have an idea that, we're here for the long haul. We're going to establish what we need. They get rid of players. So, if you guys can just elaborate on kind of, progress moving forward with this.
Yeah, what's the next couple of steps? What's their strategy? Here's the thing. Here, the next 3 weeks or so, and you've seen this, Sean, as this last couple of weeks have taken place, they're going to start looking at guys. They got these young receivers. They cleared the decks with the release of the two oldest wide receivers on the roster that they didn't see fitting into their plans. They cleared the decks. Now it's Zay Jones, it's Isaiah McKenzie, and it's Robert Foster. They're going to get big-time look. Ray McLeod, they're going to get opportunities to make a case for themselves going forward. Same thing with Wyatt Teller, Ike Butker, with Vlad Dukas, John Miller, all these young interior offensive linemen, and Jordan Mills as well. I think all these guys are going to have a chance to be evaluated in their best light. They're going to get a chance to make the case going forward. Now, Sean McDermott, his coaching staff, both with Leslie Frazier and Brian Daboll, they're going to evaluate all of their roster, and they're going to say, what do we need to do too? I think there's no question the wide receiver is a place as far as skill positions, they're going to evaluate and say, listen, we got to get better there. Offensive line, another thing. But don't think that just because their defense is number one overall in the NFL at giving up yards, that all those guys are safe either. They're going to upgrade at every level. And if it means that they're gonna take a bath on Trent Murphy, that he's not going to be around, or maybe they think, when this guy gets healthy, we like where he's at. They're going to evaluate everybody. Everybody on this roster gets evaluated, and going forward, particularly with the fact that they've got $90 million in money to spend, they're going to try and spend it wisely.
Right, right. And I appreciate that. And, thank you so much for taking my call. Big fan. Thanks, Murph.
Thanks, Sean. Thanks,
Sean.
Good
stuff.
Withstanding my
questioning.
It's a little bit self-serving, but I wanted to know. I hate to hear that. Let's go to Jerry in Webster, New York. Hello, Jerry. Go ahead. You're on the air with us.
Hey, John. Hi, Steve. Nice talking to you guys.
Hi.
You bet.
You guys are talking about, you know, Josh taking off, you know, from the pocket and whatnot. And I'm sure you both remember E.J. Manuel.
Yes,
absolutely.
And it just seemed like he had no pocket presence, or he didn't understand the pressure coming around him and how many times we saw a ball get stripped. And the man could throw the ball like crazy. What I love about Josh, he does seem to have a lot of pocket presence. He seems to be very aware of what's going on around him. And as we've seen in the past, he's delivered passes where he's getting sacked, and he delivered beautiful passes. So I think he hangs in there as long as he possibly can. And as far as, like, in comparison to Tyrod Taylor, Tyrod was shorter, so much shorter than him. I don't think he saw the field as well. And I don't think Tyrod had the confidence in his arm that Josh has.
Well, just because he's shorter, it's what he sees and what he can do with what he's got. It's not the fact that he's just shorter, and maybe that's the reason he didn't see the field better. I don't know. But a comparisons aside, as for Josh Allen – you're right. I mean, there's a couple of times where he has stood in there. Like last week, he hit a nice deep out cut, and he had the safety bearing down on him. He stood there, saw the safety coming, and he delivered it and took the shot. He also did the same thing in the game 2 weeks ago against Jacksonville in the 76-yard touchdown, where he stood in there, and everybody, including Murph and me, thought, well, he hung on to it too long, he's going to get hit. He got rid of it, 76-yard touchdown, and that was from standing in the pocket. There's been isolated cases where he has done exactly what you'd love to see a QB do. Stand in there, face down the rush with a guy coming up in his grill and make the throw. And he's done it a couple of times. And I don't know how often, and I just made this observation too. I don't know if I want him standing in there doing that all the time. Great quarterbacks do it. And they're protected in the pocket to somewhat. They can't take those big, heavy shots with guys landing on them with all their weight like they used to. And Josh is a big guy. He may be able to do that. But, you know, it's isolated instances. You want to see more of it or less of it? Do you want to see him run more or less than that? There have been cases where he's done everything exactly right, just like people on MSG are watching it right now, standing in the pocket, watching that guy come in, and then delivering the football under pressure, and having the release quick enough to wait till the last possible moment and deliver the ball. Yeah, we've seen a little bit of that. I don't know if that's a characteristic I can give to him all the time, but he's shown flashes of it, mm-hmm. just like he's shown flashes of being able to outrun everybody on the field. Mm-hmm. He's shown flashes of being able to throw a nice touch pass. But flashes of all of this stuff doesn't mean it's a characteristic that you can attribute it to him all the time.
I just want to say, and thanks for your call from Webster, New York. Comparisons to E.J. Manuel, to Tyrod Taylor, it's almost meaningless.
Look, Trent Edwards.
This is the best arm the Bills have had since Jim Kelly. There's no doubt about that to me. Best arm, most talented quarterback that has been here since Jim Kelly left, 20 years ago, 21 years ago now. So, yeah, he's got a lot more potential than anybody that's been here, and a lot more on the ball and a lot more physical talent. So to compare him to Tyrod or to E.J. Manuel is kind of like, why are we wasting our time with that?
Yeah,
his ceiling is immeasurably higher than them because of his talent, because of his innate talent, I believe.
It's second nature for people to compare him to what we've seen before. But I think you compare him – and all those guys, compare Tyrod to E.J., compare Tyrod to Trent Taylor – or Trent Edwards. Compare Tyrod to Trent Edwards or J.P. Lossman to Josh Allen. You compare them all to one, but you got to do it to make a point about what this guy is. And I think the biggest point that we have to accept, all of us, whether we like it or not, is that we don't exactly know where this guy is. All we know is he seems to be getting a little better in a lot of different areas. And there are some areas that are really hard to evaluate because we haven't seen enough. And we know that he doesn't have all that much around him. So I don't know that he can hang in the pocket like he should, because the pocket's not there consistently enough for long enough.
Yeah.
And we don't know if he's not seeing the receivers, because we don't know if they can get open because they're unproven. And we don't know if, you know.
It's fun finding out.
Yeah.
I mean, it has been fun, and there's more to come. 3 more games to go.
I keep saying it. Man, I can't get enough of watching him.
It's
fun. Know?
Hey, we want to remind you that coming up this Sunday night, our regular show, Bills Tonight, presented by ECMC. It's a post-game show, and there's going to be a special digital edition coming up Sunday late afternoon after the game. 10 minutes after the Bills-Lions game wraps up, you can go to Buffalo Bills on Facebook, on Twitter, and BuffaloBills.com and see Mike Catalano, Fred Jackson, Chris Brown on the field. Bills Tonight, special digital edition coming up this Sunday, 10 minutes after the Bills and the Lions. They'll have highlights from the game, post-game locker room interviews, in-depth analysis, press conferences with Sean McDermott, probably with Josh Allen. This Sunday, 10 minutes after the end of the game, Bills Tonight, special digital edition on Facebook, Twitter, and BuffaloBills.com. Steve and I coming back. One Bills Live from One Bills Drive, and this is Buffalo Bills Radio. Welcome back. Bills are wrapping up practice in the next few minutes inside the Pro Sports Training Center. We're at One Bills Drive. John Murphy, Steve Tasker, One Bills Live here until 3. We're going to talk with linebacker Deion Lacy coming up after practice ends. It's an important special teamer for the Bills, and also may get some defensive snaps this week with Matt Milano out. Hey, Steve, this is troubling to me. The Oakland Raiders, we know how messed up they are, and they have been for years, decades. The Oakland Raiders, had the big win against Pittsburgh. Okay. The city of Oakland on Tuesday, 2 days ago, announced it has filed a federal lawsuit against the Raiders and the NFL. The suit might lead the Raiders to leave Oakland a year early. They do not have a lease to play anywhere next year. They're moving to Las Vegas in 2020. Where do they play in 2019? That's the issue. At the owners' meetings in Dallas yesterday, the team president of the Raiders said the Raiders' lease proposal to the city for the final season is off the table because of the lawsuit filed by the city. So what are we looking at here? The Oakland Raiders, not sure where they might play. There's been speculation they may go to some other NFL city to play their home games next year. They may try to get a jump and go to somewhere in Las Vegas before the stadium is ready. What a ridiculous situation. What a ridiculous team.
It's poor leadership.
It really is.
It's poor leadership.
Not just the Raiders, I might add. The league is failing in leadership here, too.
Yeah, it is. And here's the thing. I think the league – I put it more on the Raiders than I do the league. I mean, the league, if the Raiders would let the league handle it, it would be done a much better – they've done a much better job. They may not even have to leave Oakland. But be that as it may, the Coliseum, the Oakland Alameda Coliseum is a barn. I mean, it's a horrible facility. It has been for a while, and it was. You can ask the Pittsburgh Steelers; even they can't even get the field right. And I think the fact that the Raiders are going to be one of the teams that host a game internationally, there's no question the Raiders are not going to be in Oakland for another year. I think it's too bad that after all the history, the in and out, the L.A. Raiders, now the Oakland Raiders back in Oakland, and now they're leaving to be the Vegas Raiders. That it's finally going to end for the Raiders and Oakland on such a bitter, bitter note.
At the owners' meetings yesterday, Roger Goodell says the league needs to know where the Raiders will play home games by early February, a couple of months away, at the latest, so they can set the schedule. There have been proposals floated out there for potential one-year homes for the Raiders, and the league the Raiders do not rule out San Antonio. Other cities thought to be in the running include San Diego, Reno, Nevada, Glendale, Arizona, which, by the way, has the Arizona Cardinals, and Oakland hasn't been ruled out either. Here they are, the Oakland Raiders, one of 32 NFL teams, one time thought of as one of the flagship franchises, at least in terms of names in the NFL. Not sure where they're going to play next year. May go to San Antonio.
There's no doubt they have a national following, oh, my goodness.
It's a joke.
It is a joke.
All right, we're back with more in a moment. Deion Lacy is going to join us, Bills linebacker, when we return. Come on back for that. One Bills Live from One Bills Drive, and this is Buffalo Bills Radio.